Hello, everyone. This is your Captain Wade once again coming from in the dry dock, and I'm joined once again this morning by my executive officer and co-host, Will.
Welcome back.
Okay, so I hear, Will, that you have some pretty big news coming soon in your life after graduation from Northwestern, as I recall.
Yeah, I'll be moving back to California, so I'm very excited.
Yeah. Something to do with Northrop Grumman, as I recall.
Yeah, I'll be working in the aerospace industry, so that'll be very exciting.
I gotta say, listeners out there, this guy is absolutely brilliant, and I truly, truly mean that. So, folks, we have a pretty fun episode of In the Dry Dock coming to you today, and I think we're both going to have a lot of fun with it. Will, not ship related at all, but what's your favorite movie?
What is my favorite movie? I'm not sure if I can pick just one. I've got a lot of different favorites. One of my favorites is actually called The Rocketeer. It came out in 1991. Set in the 30s in Los Angeles, and it's kind of a science fiction superhero movie, sort of. It's actually a lot of fun. I highly recommend it if you haven't checked it out before.
Actually, I haven't, so I think I'll add that one to my list.
Personally, yeah, I think you'd enjoy it a lot.
Yeah. Personally, I really enjoy a Star Wars movie, so I can definitely appreciate a science fiction adventure. Though some people would call Star Wars a different genre, which is called space fantasy. I'm not exactly sure if I follow that. But anyway, everyone knows about Star Wars, but I'm of the similar mind of you that there are lots and lots of movies that I absolutely love. I mean, there's a reason I brought my entire movie collection with me when I came to the seminary. So yeah, there's, it's hard to choose, but anyway, that's what our episode is all about today, folks. Ships and movies. You know, we had to talk about ships, of course. Personally, I think ships serve as a great place to film, and liners and warships were well known to be favored by certain Hollywood celebrities. For instance, Charlie Chaplin, the famous silent film actor, he was known for doing crazy and kind of funny, very funny stunts. He was very, very fond of the RMS Olympic. There are multiple photos of him traveling on the Olympic from Britain to the United States on the Olympic and at different times throughout her career. It's really cool to see, actually. And one of my best friends, who is a Charlie Chaplin fanatic, she didn't even know about Charlie Chaplin, even though it's fairly well documented. Ships would either represent themselves in film or would act just as much as the actors. Will, I believe you have something to say about that in particular. Movies of the week, per se.
Yeah, so my two movies of the week this week, we're not doing ships of the week, we're doing movies of the week. Mine are a movie called The Battle of the River Plate, which came out in 1956, and Sink the Bismarck, which came out in 1960. And the reason why these two movies are really cool for me is because they feature some of the actual ships that were involved in the actions that they portray. And that's kind of remarkable for us now because so few ships from the World War II era are left, particularly ones that were actually involved in some of these famous battles, because a lot of the ships that we have left over from the World War II era were ones that were built later in the war and didn't necessarily participate in those. But as I'll discuss, both Sink the Bismarck and the Battle of the River Plate had authentic vessels participating, which is pretty cool.
Yes. To be honest, I have never seen either of these movies. So how about you run us through a little bit of the plot of each of the films? Obviously, they're historical films, so some of us may have a certain idea, but run us through a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So both of these movies are actually British productions, but they are based off of actual historical events. The Battle of the River Plate was actually the first major sea battle of World War II, which occurred in 1939. And it was between a German warship called the Admiral Graf Spee, which the Germans classified as a Panzerschiff or armored ship. The British would usually call them pocket battleships because they were armed like a battleship, but were smaller and were lightly armored like a cruiser. these ships kind of didn't neatly fit into a pre-existing category, and that's why they were usually given that kind of nickname. And there was a long and complicated story as to how they got designed that way, but that's for another time. Bottom line is that the Graf Spee was used as a surface raider by the German Navy to attack British merchant shipping. And the British Navy was determined to try to stop this. And so they tried to gather their own surface forces to track down the Graf Spee, which was sailing all over the place, and try to stop it. And finally, they did. The Graf Spee was caught off of the coast of South America, specifically Uruguay, by three British cruisers, the Ajax, the Achilles, and the Exeter. Exeter being a heavy cruiser, and the other two both being Leander-class light cruisers. One of them, actually, the Achilles, was a ship of the Royal New Zealand Navy, and that becomes important later. So anyway, for a while, the Graf Spee was in Montevideo, Uruguay, but that came a little bit later. Before she got into Montevideo, she got into a sea battle with these three British cruisers, severely damaged the Exeter, but herself was severely damaged. And so then the Graf Spee put into Montevideo, Uruguay, because it was a neutral port at the time. And they thought that they could effect their repairs and escape. But the thing was, is that the remaining British cruisers kind of blockaded the harbor entrance and waited for the Graf Spee to come out. And then they got reinforced by another heavy cruiser, the HMS Cumberland. And then the British very cleverly spread misinformation to the Germans that additional reinforcements were on the way. And so they said that the British battle cruiser Renown was going to be outside the harbor as well. And in fact, the Renown was on the way, but she wasn't going to get there for a few more days. So the Germans decided that they were cornered. They didn't feel that even if they managed to break the blockade, they could safely get back to Germany. And so instead of going out to fight the British cruisers, the Graf Spee sailed out of Montevideo Harbor, and all the people in Montevideo thought this was going to be so exciting. So they all went out to the harbor mouth and kind of lined the shoreline because they're like, oh, look, we're going to get to see a sea battle. So they all brought like picnics and stuff, and they kind of wanted to make this a big entertainment thing. But instead of giving them the sea battle that they wanted, the Graf Spee scuttled herself near the entrance to Montevideo Harbor. And scuttling is a term for when a ship purposefully sinks itself. And so the Graf Spee went down. Captain Hans Langsdorff, who was the commander of the Graf Spee, returned to his hotel room in Montevideo where he committed suicide. And parts of the Graf Spee are actually still there to this day. So anyway, this was a very dramatic event, and it was the first major sea battle in the war. This took place during the period of World War II that was referred to as the Phony War. And that was when the armies in Europe weren't actually doing a whole lot against each other. And so people were getting kind of restless, like, is anything ever actually going to happen? And so the Battle of the River Plate was a major boost for British morale because they were able to successfully neutralize an important German surface warship. So anyway, fast forward 15 years later to 1956, and they decide they want to make a movie about this because it's a great story. And so the producer starts hunting around to look for ships to portray the vessels in the movie. And this was back when there were still some ships around from the World War II era. And so they decided that, hey, you know, maybe we can find an actual warship to play some of these British cruisers. But they got really lucky because somebody, you know, who knew what they were talking about said, wait a second, isn't the Achilles still around? And it turns out that the HMNZS Achilles, the New Zealand light cruiser that participated in the battle, had since been sold to the Indian Navy and renamed the INS Delhi, but she was still around. And so the movie crew contacted the Indian government and said, hey, you have the Achilles. Do you mind if we use it to film and play herself in the movie? And the Indian government said, sure, that's a great idea. So what ended up happening was the HMNZS Achilles, now the INS Delhi, portrayed herself in all of the scenes in the movie, which I just think is so cool, especially since this movie is in Technicolor. So it's really cool to see this ship in color. And then it turns out that the HMS Cumberland, the heavy cruiser that showed up at the end, was also still around. She was, in fact, the last remaining county class heavy cruiser of the Royal Navy, and very distinctive because they had three smokestacks. So she portrayed herself in the movie. And then to play the other two cruisers, the Ajax and the Exeter, the Royal Navy gladly provided the services of two more very famous light cruisers, the HMS Sheffield and HMS Jamaica. And while these ships were of a different class than the ships that they were portraying, so it wasn't totally accurate from a visual standpoint, these two ships were really famous for the actions that they had taken during World War II. The Sheffield was involved in the hunt for the Bismarck, which I'll talk about next, and the Jamaica was involved in the destruction of the battleship Scharnhorst. So both of them had been in action against German surface ships, just not the one in the movie. Now, playing the Admiral Graf Spee was a problem, though, because obviously she was gone and there were no other German warships around because they'd all been destroyed. So what they did was they borrowed the American heavy cruiser USS Salem, a Des Moines-class heavy cruiser, to portray the Graf. How did they get away with this? Because the Salem looks nothing like the Graf Spee. But they managed to use a historical detail from that time period to kind of get around this. And so the Graf Spee, as many other German raiders did, was a master of disguise. And so during the actual campaign, they had built a fake third turret for the ship. So it looked like she had two turrets forward and one turret aft, which happened to be the actual configuration of the Salem. So in the movie, they got around it by saying, oh, well, we disguised the Graf Spee to look like an American heavy cruiser. And so that's kind of how they got around it. There were a few foibles, though. So the American Navy refused to allow the Salem to fly any German flags during filming. And so to get around this, all the scenes where they showed the German flag were actually filmed on board British ships. And then anything involving destruction or the ship blowing up were filmed using model work. And then a lot of the firing sequences on the British cruisers were filmed aboard the HMS Birmingham, another British light cruiser. So a lot of different ships were involved in the filming of this movie. So that was pretty cool. I only saw this movie within the last year because I kind of found out about it, and it was really well done. I really enjoyed it. It did condense the events down a little bit, but overall it was a very accurate, very faithful reproduction of what happened, and it was really cool to see the ships play themselves. And the ones that weren't necessarily playing themselves were still really cool to see because they themselves were historic. So that was cool. Highly recommend Battle of the River Plate. And then my other sort of movie of the week this week is Sink the Bismarck. So the Bismarck story is pretty famous. If you're into ships at all, you've probably heard about it. But the Bismarck was a German battleship that escaped into the North Atlantic along with a heavy cruiser, called the Prince Eugen. And kind of like the Graf Spee, the Bismarck and the Prince Eugen's mission was to destroy British merchant ships. And up until this point in the war, German surface raiders had been pretty successful with this. Two of their other battleships, the Scharnhorst and the Gneisenau, which were commanded by Admiral Lütjens, who had then been transferred to the Bismarck, so it was the same guy doing this, had been very successful. Yeah.
If I may, just as a little bit for all of you out there, the reason that merchant raiding was so huge for the German Kriegsmarine was because when you're fighting a war with an island nation, the best way to lay siege to an island nation is to essentially starve. And that was the idea of merchant raiding, coming to supply the British Isles and make it impossible for them to wage war. That was the idea.
Yeah, and merchant raiding has been a typical tactic for inferior navies for a long time. The German fleet was never strong enough to directly challenge the Royal Navy in an actual pitched sea battle, and so they resorted to that tactic. And other countries throughout history have also done this when their navy was a lot weaker than the navy of their opponent. But it was England, as Wade mentioned, was particularly vulnerable to this because they really relied on their merchant fleet to supply them. So anyway, the Bismarck was trying to do this. And of course, because the Bismarck was the most powerful warship in the German fleet. And as an aside, the Bismarck has kind of been inflated as a legend in subsequent decades. And so you'll often hear stuff like, oh my gosh, the Bismarck was the most powerful warship ever. The fact was that the British had, by that point in the war, at least 11 capital ships with the same or superior main armament to the Bismarck. So it wasn't like none of the British ships could stand up to the Bismarck, but they were concerned that the Bismarck was going to evade the Royal Navy and get out and do all of this. So anyway, they sent a variety of different task forces to try to stop the Bismarck. And one of the reasons why they had to do this was because there were four potential ways that the Bismarck could break out into the North Atlantic. And it turned out that the one that she used was called the Denmark Strait. And that was guarded by two major British warships, the HMS Hood, a battlecruiser, and the HMS Prince of Wales, a brand new battleship. And in the ensuing very famous battle, the Bismarck destroyed the Hood with a extremely lucky hit to the Hood's powder magazines. And this was devastating to the British. The Hood was considered kind of the flagship of the Royal Navy. She was the most prestigious ship in the fleet. And so losing the Hood was disastrous for the Royal Navy. And so in response, they kind of mustered up everything that they had. Winston Churchill famously said, "I don't care how you do it, you must sink the Bismarck." And so ultimately, the British would muster, I think, 8 battleships, at least 2 aircraft carriers, and a whole bunch of other smaller ships to try to hunt down the Bismarck. There were a lot more things that happened over the course of 8 days. The Bismarck kind of came in and out of the British radar and surface tracking, but eventually she was tracked down. A ferry swordfish biplane from the aircraft carrier HMS Ark Royal scored a very lucky hit and hit the Bismarck in the rudder. And that's a big problem if you're a ship. If your rudder gets taken out, that means you're not able to maneuver. And so the Bismarck was left without steering capability. And she was hunted down and destroyed by the battleships King George V and Rodney and the heavy cruisers Suffolk, Norfolk, and Dorsetshire. So anyway, this was a very famous battle. And so, of course, this was a natural subject to make a movie out of. And so in 1960, a movie was released. And kind of like the Battle of the River Plate, this movie used a lot of authentic equipment. And actually, C.S. Forrester, the famous author who wrote the Hornblower novels, was involved in writing the screenplay. So he was working to make sure that it was very historically accurate. And it turned out that one of the producers of the movie was the son-in-law of Lord Mountbatten, who at the time was in charge of the UK's defense organization. And so he basically convinced Lord Mountbatten to let him film a whole bunch of battleship sequences on board the HMS Vanguard, which was a previous ship of the week for us. She was about to be scrapped at this time, but she was still around. And what was really good about this was that the Hood had the same model Mark I breech-loading 15-inch guns that the Vanguard carried. So all the scenes filmed inside the Vanguard's turrets were very authentic for what would be happening on the Hood. The Hood's turrets were slightly different, but the guns were the same. And so getting to see that done on the Vanguard was very authentic. And a lot of other shipboard scenes were also filmed on board the Vanguard. Some authentic British cruisers and destroyers were involved in the production as well. So the HMS Belfast was used to portray some of the cruisers in the movie. The Belfast herself was not involved in the Bismarck action, but her sister ship, the Edinburgh, was. And the Belfast herself was later involved in the hunt for the Scharnhorst, which was a similar battle that occurred 2 years later. She is actually still preserved in the United Kingdom. You can visit her in London. She is the only major surface warship from World War II in the Royal Navy that's still left. And then another kind of interesting fact about Sink the Bismarck, they used 3 real ferry swordfish biplanes, which were filmed in operation aboard the HMS Colossus, a light carrier, which was not involved in the battle. But one of the ships that was in the battle was in the movie, the HMS Victorious, an aircraft carrier, which was one of the ships that launched airstrikes against the Bismarck, did appear in the movie, portraying both herself and the aircraft carrier Ark Royal, which could not be in the movie because the Ark Royal was sunk during World War II. And then kind of a last little tidbit of authenticity to this movie, the gentleman who played the captain of the battleship Prince of Wales, who witnessed the destruction of the Hood, which was a traumatic moment for everybody, was actually one of only 2 people to survive the battle on the Prince of Wales's bridge. He was not the captain of the Prince of Wales during the actual battle, but he was the captain's yeoman. And during the battle, a shell from the Bismarck struck the Prince of Wales in the bridge and killed everybody on board except for the captain and the yeoman. And so the yeoman was able to play the captain because he was there and he remembered, you know, everything that had happened. And so his reaction to the Hood being destroyed was a very authentic, you know, that's really how he felt at the time. The other thing that was kind of cool was there's little outtakes throughout the movie of this British BBC news correspondent, kind of a Walter Cronkite type, updating the public on what was going on. And that was actually the very same man who did the actual BBC broadcasts at the time. So he came back and basically reprised word for word his actual broadcasts. So that was really cool. Sink the Bismarck, I think, is a great movie. I've really enjoyed it. It is not what you would expect from a big action movie standpoint, considering it was such a famous battle, it had a lot of action potential, because I think at least half, if not more than half, of the movie takes place inside the war room in London, where it talks about all the planning behind the action. And so the main character of the movie is actually the guy back in London who's trying to coordinate the actions of all of the British ships. So if you're really into strategy and tactics, that's really fun to watch. If you are just looking for a big sea battle, you might be kind of disappointed, because a lot of the movie takes place in a room. At the end, when the Bismarck is sunk, I find this kind of funny. He triumphantly picks up the little model of the Bismarck that he has on his map and flips it over. But there are some good sea battle sequences as well. So anyway, I think it's a great movie. Highly recommend it for anybody who's interested in the Bismarck story. I am kind of gobsmacked and can't really believe that that is the only movie that's ever been made about the Bismarck. I'm very surprised that they haven't made any other ones since. So hopefully somebody will, maybe with some updated computer generated graphics, we could get some really good sea battle sequences. But the authenticity from both of these movies can never be repeated, since most of these ships are gone.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, there just aren't enough World War II ships left to really have that level of authenticity. But at the same time, Hollywood has really had to up their game in the last, I would say, 10, 15 years in terms of historical films, really making it the way it should. I always think of the movie Lincoln, which of course is talking about Abraham I believe it's the 13th Amendment pushed through Congress, and it's a beautifully restorable movie from what I've seen, basically. And of course, you can't argue with the actor that plays Lincoln. He's amazing. But anyway, and to be honest, Will, I really do have to see those movies that you mentioned. I will admit, as a ship fan, I have, up until you talked about them, I had not even heard of either of them. So there's definitely time for me to see it. I should definitely make some time. But as for me, I have something that maybe more people from our day and age might be a little more more familiar with. These are movies of ships and film that are a bit more from the modern era. The first movie that I'm going to talk about is, I should mention that both of these films are completely fictional, except for the ships that are involved, essentially. The first is the 1980 film, The Final Countdown. No, this isn't the classic 80s power ballad. I know that's what a lot of people think. That is not what we're talking about. The Final Countdown represents a milestone of full modern military cooperation with Hollywood that continues to this day in some fashion. Up until this point, the U.S. military had been, especially the Navy, had been a little bit hesitant to work with Hollywood. You mentioned that, Will, that even though they loaned the USS Salem to be the Graf Spee, there were certain conditions and stuff like that had to be put on the ship, and she also wasn't representing herself. In this case, the Final Countdown was actually the ship not only had her full complement of crew that were technically a part of the film, the ship was also playing herself. That was a huge deal in terms of filmmaking, that the Navy would actually allow these ships to be kind of the stars of the stage, almost, that I would argue. Now, The Final Countdown focuses on the first class of supercarriers called the USS Nimitz, which would become the Nimitz class of carriers, which ironically, it's the most ubiquitous class of aircraft carriers currently in the U.S. Navy, though I'm sure the Gerald R. Ford class will begin to supplant it as the Nimitz class starts to age out. But anyway, the whole idea with The Final Countdown is that it is what's called an alternate fiction story, which Will and I are very familiar with the genre. But for those that don't know, this genre is where a certain event of history is changed or altered to tell a new story. And in this case, essentially the USS Nimitz, through a kind of really weird, just random phenomena, actually is dropped into December 6th, 1941. So it is dropped into, it is essentially dropped 40 years back into the, into just before the dawn of the Second World War for the United States. So it was a big, big deal. And of course, you have a bunch of actors that were involved with this movie that are, that were famous, at least in the 80s, particularly Kirk Douglas and Martin Sheen. If I remember correctly, Kirk Douglas plays a plays the captain of the USS Nimitz. And then Martin Sheen, if I remember correctly, is a journalist that gets kind of picked up and brought along for the ride. But of course, they get dropped in and they have no idea what's going on. But eventually they send out a combat air patrol with two F-14 Tomcats. That's the first time F-14 had ever appeared in film. A lot of people think, you know, that the movie Top Gun, that's where the F-14 was introduced to the public in that way. The Final Countdown was where it happened. So anyway, they come across two A6M Zeros. And if I remember correctly, these were actual preserved Zeros that were flying capable, if I remember correctly. And ultimately, they shoot them down. And this kicks off a whole host of events that would actually lead to them capturing a Japanese officer and one of the people that is actually on the Nimitz is Japanese, and he basically completely destroys the surprise of the plan. And they also end up accidentally kidnapping one of the key senators that would be involved in the attack on Pearl Harbor, but involved in the decision to declare war. It was actually it's actually really funny how much the Nimitz becomes the center of the story. But ultimately, before she can even affect events really big, just as events are really starting to kick off, she gets sucked back to her own real world. So it's actually kind of a tease, I would say. And I think that's one of the reasons why the movie maybe didn't do as well as they hoped. They describe it as a modest success, which in this case means that it made its money back plus a little something extra. So I really like the movie personally myself. It's not everyone's cup of tea. It's a lot of talking first with a little action, kind of like Hunt for the Bismarck. It's not what you would expect to begin with. And maybe one day the Hollywood will revisit this concept. But as for now, that's the Final Countdown. Hope you like it. So anyway, the second movie that I'm going to be talking about, and I know I'm going to get a ton of flack for this, so of internet criticism, it's the 2012 film Battleship. Yeah, I know this movie was considered one of the worst that was ever made in the 2010s, but bear with me.
It's a guilty pleasure. I like it too.
Yes. It is for sure a guilty pleasure movie. And that is because of the ship that comes near the climax of the movie. But to give an idea of the plot, and again, this is also what you could call an all-star cast movie. Not necessarily in terms of well-known actors, but you had a lot of well-known celebrities that were involved in the making of this movie. You had singer Rihanna playing a role, model Brooklyn Decker, and you had actor Liam Neeson, who is known to be not necessarily a dramatic actor, but he's a great action actor. That's one of the things that he's really good at. So anyway, the cool thing about Battleship is that it did involve a lot of on-site recording with different warships of the time. Now remember, this is the modern day, so pretty much with the U.S. Navy, you're talking, if you're not talking an aircraft carrier, you're talking Arleigh Burke-class destroyers or the Ticonderoga. There's a lot less variety that went. But anyway, John Paul Jones and the USS Sampson, which are both Arleigh Burke-class destroyers, play themselves in this, and ultimately they both get sunk at the near the climax of the film, unfortunately. And the Japanese Defense Force ship Miyoko is also a part of the film. Now, the Miyoko is kind of like what I call a cheap knockoff of the Arleigh Burke-class destroyer. In fact, that goes with a lot of Japanese warships. They look sort of like American warships, just a little off. And I think that has something to do with the way their constitution is set up. But in any
Yeah,
case,
they use the same Aegis air defense system that our destroyers use. So that's part of the reason why they look similar is because they have the same flat plane radar. And it's funny though, a lot of their ships are named after World War II ships. The Miyoko was a Mogami class heavy cruiser in World War II. So that always gives me a little pause. But yeah, the Japanese ships are very similar overall to US ones.
yes. So anyway, the whole premise of the movie Battleship is that you have an alien species. Fortunately, we kind of called there by accident. They set themselves down near Hawaii to begin their invasion and actually create a force field that basically cuts these three ships off, the John Paul Jones, the Sampson, and the Miyoko, off from the rest of the 2012 RIMPAC exercise. Now, the RIMPAC is basically a giant war games exercise between different Pacific navies. So you could have the Japanese Defense Force, you could have the Australian Navy, you could have the New Zealand Navy. Heck, I bet eventually, if the Chinese ever calm down, they will be a part of RIMPAC at some point. But anyway, course events, essentially all three of these ships get sunk, and the survivors of these three destroyers end up being stuck on the island of Oahu. And of course they're realizing that it's a pretty hopeless situation because all three of their ships were absolutely mauled by this alien species technology. And they're the music's getting low, really sad. And then the captain, I believe of the John Paul Jones, he looks over and they're coming up on the shore of Oahu, particularly, and they see none other than the USS Missouri, BB-63's Iowa class battleship. And he utters the famous line, "We've got a battleship." And this marks the turning point of the film. Of course, when they get on the Missouri, they play up the idea that again, this ship is has been sitting for a long time, not going to be operated very easily, and they don't even have the expertise to argue it. And then come to man it, and then comes one of the greatest scenes in film. I will argue this to the day I die. You have a bunch of veteran Navy veterans. Some from actual battleships of the U.S. Navy coming. They come from the back of the ship, and it's a real cool way the way they film it. And basically, the captain of the John Paul Jones asks them for assistance, and then we have a montage of them getting the Missouri ready for battle. And personally, my favorite is when they get the boilers ready, and they go, and the guy goes, "Best cover your ears." And then sticks the flame in, and it's just it for ship fans like us, especially battleship buffs like us, it makes us so happy to see the Missouri do what she does best, basically.
I love that movie. It's great. And actually, I think for filming it, they actually towed the Missouri out of Pearl Harbor to do some of the at sea filming scenes, which is
Well,
pretty cool too.
essentially, from what I understand, that particular bit The Missouri was actually scheduled to be towed out of Pearl Harbor for what was called a basically for maintenance. In other words, she needed some work that could not be done in her berth at Pearl Harbor. And one thing about the Iowa class battleships is that they have a bit of an interesting dispensation with the U.S. Navy. All four of them are museum ships now. Technically, all four of them have at least a provision to be reactivated if the worst came to worst. It's a weird situation. If I remember correctly, the Wisconsin and the New Jersey are kept the closest to activation.
It's the Iowa and the Wisconsin. Yeah, I think of the two, the Wisconsin is kept more ready.
Yeah. So in any case, the battleship Missouri sails out and begins to confront this alien mothership that's there. And eventually later on, she carries this one of her 16-inch shells that is armor piercing. And basically as a battleship fan, we absolutely love this because the armor piercing shell goes through and cripples the alien mothership, and down it goes. And again, serious battleship geek out moment for us all. So in any case, the USS Missouri returns in triumph, and then we have the whole, we have the whole epilogue after that. Really just a really fun, what I call, romp of a film. It doesn't make sense at times. It's overblown, and it almost seems like a movie that Michael Bay would have directed, but still.
He actually did direct it.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're right. I completely forgot about that.
but yeah, I mean, you just watch it. Don't ask too many questions, and just enjoy it. What's funny, too, is, it's ostensibly based off of the board game Battleship, which, if you watch carefully, there are elements in the movie that actually do call back to the board game. But of course, the board game does not have any actual aliens in it. But yeah, I second Wade thoroughly on this one. This is a great movie. It of course was panned when it came out, but usually I like the movies that get panned. So, there you go.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, yeah, like I said, the budget for this film was $220 million, which is about normal for summer blockbusters around the time. And the box office was $303 million, which, technically is a profit. But at the same time, that the budget of a film doesn't cover a lot. And I don't even want to guess how much it would have cost. Say if you had all the ships and all the manpower of the World War II ships you mentioned, Will, how expensive those movies would have gotten to produce nowadays.
Yeah, so, yeah. I don't know what the budgets were on the two that I mentioned. I don't think they were very much, because a lot of the stuff was just kind of ready to go.
Yeah, but yeah, it would have been, I think it would, in today's money, I'm pretty sure they would have been very expensive movies to film. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the reasons why we don't see it happening again, especially The Hunt for the Bismarck.
Although, this November, a new movie is coming out about the Battle of Midway, ooh, which I am very excited for. It's kind of a remake of the 1976 Midway movie. It has an all-star cast. A lot of major people are in it. I am cautiously optimistic. A lot of, historical war movies get a lot of stuff wrong, but so far from the trailers, this looks kind of promising. Unfortunately, I don't think any actual ships will be in the movie because it's pretty much all CGI'd and none of the ships from the Battle of Midway are still around. But it looks like it might be kind of good. So I'm going to keep my eyes out for that one. I think it's coming out, like I said, in November. So that should be interesting.
All right. Well, I can hear the water coming into the dry dock. We are out of time today. It's been a really fun episode. Don't you agree, Will?
Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yeah. And again, If you haven't seen any of these movies, we highly encourage you to go out and watch The Battle of the River Platte, The Hunt for the Bismarck, the and Battleship. And again, if they don't seem like your cup of tea, give them a chance. These are all great movies. And with that, an executive officer bid you farewell.
Bye, guys.